How many times has this happened to you? You said, what I need is a great podcast on books. Well, it's here. Chatter on Books, and it starts right now. I'm Jamie McIntyre, your part-time announcer, and here's your full-time host, Tori Clark.
We have a lot to cover tonight in Chatter, everybody. Welcome back. In just a little bit, we are going to talk to Ann Butler, pretty extraordinary woman. I'll just say this, and I will say that to Ann Butler when she joins us in a few minutes. She had me at five kids, at raising five kids. I am the youngest of five. My mother never recovered from doing that. And she was a spy, and she was an extraordinary wife. And Ann Butler's just remarkable. So wife, mother, spy, the most accurate title we've ever had for a book in a few minutes. But right now we've got to catch up with Claude on the horses. And David's got to give us context on the NBA gambling. But Claude, first, tell us last weekend with the horses in Maryland. You're next
last,
now.
Yeah, last weekend I was in Elkton, Maryland, at Fairhill for the Maryland Five Star, where these are show horses. They do the fancy thing called dressage.
Then ballet, they, horse ballet.
Yep, and they do the cross country.
Your world, Tori.
And I feel like I say this every year, like when you see these show horses, they're different than race horses, than anyone else who's got a horse farm. These are some of the most majestic, beautiful animals I've ever seen in my life, that are well taken care of, that are so strong and muscular. And again, I'm not necessarily well versed, obviously, in anything equestrian, but doing it for the last 3 years, I've learned a couple of things. And I just have an appreciation, not just for like the trainers and the owners and the jockeys, but for the horses themselves. I mean, they know what's going on. And what I love about show horses more than race horses, or maybe the sport of it, is that if a rider feels like this is not the horse's day, they just stop. They don't put them through any unnecessary pain or any kind of stress to push them through an event. If it's not your day for cross country, we're going to stop and we'll just withdraw, and they're fine with it. And they don't get paid a ton of money. I mean, like the purses for these events are not great. And I think in America, there's only two five-star events that include three-star horses. And in Maryland, we have one of them, you know? And so it's a privilege to be there. And essentially, by the time you get to Sunday, it's really just a fall kind of food and alcohol festival with the show going on, but it's fun.
People watch horses gallop by. Yeah.
Essentially.
Everybody in every other element of the horse world will say to yourself, oh no, racehorses are their best, or the stuff that my daughter and I did, you know, Hunters and Jumpers is what it's called. That was the best. It was kind of the really good, they're called 3 day horses. The really good 3 day horses are exceptional because they do the horse ballet, which it really is extraordinarily difficult and complex, and figure skating times 10. And then they do the cross country, which is insane. Oh. Several miles up and down hills, the most terrifying jumps you've ever seen in your life. And it requires bravery and skill and speed and endurance. And then they come back and do this very disciplined thing, jumping these very technical courses. The ones that can do that at that level, at the five-star level, they're the best.
They're unbelievable. Best. And even with the, as you call it, the horse ballet, I mean, the way that they have to listen to the rider, in a way where the rider cues them without showing that they're cueing them, and the horse knows exactly what's going on. It's just, you know, you watch it and you're like, I don't fully understand all of this, but it's because something's wrong with me, not the horse or the rider.
Yeah.
They're on a different level than I'm on. And I'm just trying to figure it all out. But I appreciate it. It's crazy.
99 times out of 100, it's the rider's mistake, not the horse. Next year, because of your work, you'll be asked back for the fourth time.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
On the horse, man. We got to do like a play-by-play.
Okay.
Back of a horse.
Okay. All right. They won't let me anywhere near these horses. What are you talking about? Like, we don't want him around these animals.
Okay, David Aldridge, from the beautiful equestrian world.
Yes.
People take care of each other and take care of these creatures.
Sometimes.
Okay. Sometimes. Okay, the NBA gambling thing, which is my first reaction was, as we all traded texts the other day, who knew the mob was still working in New York? That kind of made me feel good for some reason. Put this in context. Put this sports gambling scandal in context with others.
Compared to other sports? I mean, it's bad. It's bad. You don't have a active head coach and an active player and a recently active player who was an assistant coach who happens to be one of LeBron James's best friends involved in a gambling scandal and not have it be really, really bad, right? So it's really, really bad. I would say this, that the notion that the NBA is going to somehow die off because of this, I think, is a bit overwrought. Baseball seemed to get over Pete Rose being suspended for life for gambling. Like they, it was bad. It was extremely bad. It was one of the most famous players in the history of the game being kicked out of the league because he bet on baseball games, which is like the cardinal sin. And they got past it, and the NBA will get past this. It's not ideal. It does tie into some other things that have that are going on currently in the league off the court that really are not good for the league in terms of its PR. But I think they'll get through it. I mean, I don't think that it's like, you know, a death blow to the NBA, but it's bad. It's bad. It's not.
But there's no putting, we've talked about this on the show before, and there's Nancy Bainon, who's in from our new favorite independent bookstore, Arcadia Books. Hang on, Nancy, we're doing Chatter on Sports. We've talked about this before, the profusion, just the overwhelming, everywhere you go, there's betting on sports. Every time you turn on your laptop, your phone, you're in an arena, anywhere, it's just, if you have a gambling addiction, I don't know how you withstand it.
You don't.
It's never going back in the bottle, right? Because
No,
these
no.
leagues aren't going to start saying, oh, now you can't gamble on these things. They can't.
No, you can't
Well,
get rid of it.
because they're making so much money on these new ways to bet, these prop bets where you can bet on just one and one individual, the temptation for one individual to do one tiny undetectable thing, to where you can make and the leagues make 20%. They estimate that they eliminated prop bets, they would be cutting the income by about 20%. And by the way, just as an aside, I won $100 because I bet before we went on the air that David Aldridge would use the word overwrought in the first 10 minutes of the show. So I'm up for
I
that.
claim the fame.
But I would take
Anytime anyone wants
vocabulary.
to bet on anything on Chatter on Books, I'll be there, whatever. Mole, what is it? Informant?
I will have to set it up on Patreon first. Only paid Patreon members will be
There you
able
go.
to prop bet on
I think
this.
they could actually move on the prop bets because those are easy. That's low-hanging fruit, right? Those are easy to get rid of. But to Jamie's point, they'll just replace it with something else, some other kind of betting that you can make
Well,
that 20% right back on.
I
So,
think we should make a distinction, though, because there are two completely different scandals here. One of them is about poker games that really has nothing to do with the NBA, other
right.
than the fact that
The coach was involved in
Billy
the game,
was the
allegedly.
so-called face card, the celebrity at the table to attract the suckers, the fish, to the game, and those were run by the mob. And I mean, the implication is that Billings got a cut. Maybe he got a cut. Maybe he didn't. I don't. Or you know, we don't actually know the defense. What the
We
defense
do
is going
not.
to be. That maybe they're going to claim that
He had no
they had
idea.
no idea. They were just they were invited as a celebrity and well treated to get the other people to play, and that might not be illegal. And then so there's the poker games. And by the way, I thought Billings was not actually working for the league at the time that he was involved in these games, which was, I thought, in 2018 or something. I don't
Well,
remember.
Chauncey
You
has
have to
been
check that.
involved in, whether he was with Portland or not at the time, he was doing media for ESPN. So, I mean, he
Yeah.
was doing one of those
Anyway,
two things. So,
and
he was involved
then
in
there's the
time.
other part where where inside information is being leaked, what Kash Patel referred to as the inside trading of Wall Street on the NBA, which was trading on information that gets better. That's a completely different thing.
Correct.
And I think it'll be interesting to see what the how this plays out in court. I would just point out that if anyone's interested in the contrarian view, Sally Jenkins wrote a piece in The Atlantic in which she argues that, in fact, as David suggested, that the charges are a bit overwrought, small potatoes, I think she called it, and she explains why she thinks there's not as much there as the FBI and the Justice Department.
TBD, TBD. I've never seen Kash Patel have so much fun. Okay,
Yeah,
go from
it was a bit much to watch that
yeah. I
display,
mean the people had
because.
spent hours coming up with the cute phrases and the little,
Well, yeah, and again, if this is such a, devastating legal case that has far-reaching implications for society. Where were the mob guys? Where was the perp walk with the mob guys? Where are the pictures of the mob guys that were involved? Why do we know nothing about the mob guys that were involved with this other than, you know, names on an indictment?
You know, alert listeners will know we've had a couple of good mobsters on this show.
I think it was, hey, here's a famous name that's involved with this. Let's throw that out there and get people's attention. And the actual case, I'm not sure is going to live up to the scrutiny, but we'll see.
I forget.
We're going to move on from the tawdry world of
all right.
scandals to adorable Spring Green, Wisconsin.
There you go.
Nancy Bainan, owner of Arcadia Books. Now, Nancy and I have been trading a lot of emails recently, and she denies that this adorable bookstore, Arcadia Books, in Spring Green, Wisconsin, which I think it should be Green Spring, Wisconsin, but it's Spring Green, Wisconsin, is not the perfect Hallmark movie bookstore. But Nancy, welcome to Chatter. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. And I'm not the owner. I'm just a manager.
Just the manager. Okay. Well, you're the most important person there for us. Thank you for joining us. Tell us about this very Hallmark movie situation in Spring Green, Wisconsin. Nancy's husband is the vet, which if you watch Hallmark movies as much as I do, this is it, man. Somebody runs the bookstore. Somebody's the vet. There's a dog that's the regular in the bookstore and the dog gets sick and the vet has to take care of it. But
they're
tell
trying
us
to feed the dog and they touch hands at the bag. And that's exactly. when they look at each other and then love blooms from there.
Oh, exactly right. Yeah.
Exactly how it happened. It's totally how it happened. Okay. So Spring Green is a little bit northwest of Madison, the capital. Mm-hmm. And we're a town of just about 1,500 people. So you might ask, how do we have this beautiful, flourishing bookstore in a town of 1,500 people that's a tourist town, a seasonal town? We're the busiest in the summer. We just have great support, local support. And because we also share the town with American Players Theater, which is this beautiful outdoor amphitheater. They also have an indoor space. Wall Street Journal said it was the best acting troupe in the country a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this little place called Taliesin, which is Frank Lloyd Wright's.
That little place called Taliesin. Yeah.
And we have this beautiful river that brings a lot of people in. Oh, and there's also the House on the Rock.
Right.
So which is a destination. It's a, I don't even really have the words for it. I can tell you that I walked through it one day and I had a baby the next day. So if that kind of scared the kid out, I think, I don't know.
You wonderful people are Arcadia Books. You're big on local and regional authors, right?
Absolutely. Yes. We have some great authors. This area is so beautiful. It's called the Driftless, the geological name for it, because the glaciers did not go through here. So we have these green rolling hills. And so we have a lot of books about the Driftless, about what makes this unique, not just as the topography of the place, but also the people that settled here and the way we live now. Spring Green is just this beautiful, artsy kind of town. People call it like Stars Hollow, like from the Gilmore Girls or Mayberry, because it is a great place to live and to raise a family.
Okay, meet you. Where'd you meet your vet husband?
In college.
Oh, nice. Perfect. Yep. But then you didn't see each other for a few years. Claude and I are Hallmark fans. Then you didn't see each other for a few years. Okay, so Claire McLaughlin, who's a wonderful publicist, is the one who first introduced us to you. Thank you, Claire, very much. And you're going to be one of the participating bookstores in the pitch, our writing competition for 2026, in which authors are nominated by independent bookstores, and they have to nominate a local person. This is still a work in progress. We're definitely doing it out there. But how do we make this fun and useful for you and Arcadia Books and your community? How can we make this fun and interesting and engaging for you all?
Well, clearly, we need to make this like March Madness, right? We're going to have brackets and...
Perfect.
Yeah. So... We have a newsletter that goes out to a few thousand people each week. So I think we can get people pulled in and listening to the podcast and
awesome.
And yeah.
When we're ready, the plan right now, the it's still a work in progress, but the plan now is in the spring of 2026, have people like you come on and pitch your nominated author Then we have them on at some point, and then have the winners announced in the summer. And I've been trading emails with Ron Charles from the Washington Post. And I said to him, okay, if I promise not to ask you to be a judge, because he gets asked all the time, will you give us advice on how to make this easy for judges? So he's getting roped into this as well. Okay, awesome. Nancy, great to see you
Great.
in person.
Yeah, thank you. This
Thank you
is
for
so fun.
being part of the pitch. Say hi to everybody for us in Spring Green, Wisconsin. Consider changing it to Green Spring, Wisconsin, because
Oh, and just so you know, I just bought my son, who lives in DC, he works for the NIH. I just bought him tickets to the Bucks Wizards game for his birthday.
Boom, there you go.
Nice. David, how's that game going to go?
Not well for the home team.
Nancy, thank you. Go take care of your customers or hang with us, whatever you'd like.
Thank you so
Great to
much.
see
Nice to
you.
meet you all.
Take care. Okay.
Too.
Bye.
Awesome. Ann Butler, welcome to Chatter. How are you?
Hi. Thanks, Tori. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Thank you for being with us. I was saying earlier when we started the show, Ann, there's never been a more accurate title of a book. We find titles of books often tortured, but Wife, Mother, Spy, An Extraordinary Life Filled with Ordinary Days, pretty spectacular. And
Yeah.
as the youngest of five girls and as the mother of three, you had me on five kids, Anne.
Wow.
Anybody who could,
Wow.
using the word carefully, successfully raise five kids, that's enough. But raising five kids and being a spy, it's so spectacular. It's just the best.
So you're the youngest of five, Tori.
Youngest of five
Wow.
girls.
And the best thing is my kids all still love their mother. It's great. They're all, yeah.
Are so far. So far. Okay, so on Chatter, and we love the backstories, asking people what they where they grew up, what they wanted to be when they were five. So where'd you grow up? What did you think you were going to be when you were five?
So upstate New York, born in the UP of Michigan, actually, and then
Nice,
moved to New
beautiful.
York. Oh yeah. Quite rural. Grew up in upstate New York with my family, brothers, three brothers. I was the only girl. Liked the whole international thing, even when I was young. My father traveled a lot for work and overseas. Took me to Mexico, the Yucatan Peninsula, where he did a lot of his research.
He took you were 12 or 13 when he did that, right?
Yeah, down in the
So
Yucatan.
he took you out of school for a month or so.
Well, it was he did. He took my so I have three brothers, my two older brothers, and I went. My younger brother still complains that he didn't get a chance.
Legit,
But it
legit.
was so it wasn't a as I said in the book, not a touristy trip. We were watching my dad do his work. So the whole international scene kind of thing really appealed to me. In fact, I picked my college specifically because it had a year abroad program. Great. That took me to France. Then I went to Belgium after college. And by then it was cemented. I wanted to work in the international sector. So I come home after college, after Belgium, start applying to international banks, to NGOs, to you name it, anybody that had anything, any kind of connection overseas, and the CIA. So it was a
But
long
who
process.
put the idea of the CIA in your head?
State Department, CIA. I mean, of course, I knew that CIA worked overseas, primarily overseas, as did State Department. So why not apply? Did I know what I was getting into? Not really, but I wanted to be overseas. So it was only when I got the job, because of course, even during the interview process, they don't tell you what you're getting into. They can't. They don't select you, or you decide not to take the job. They're not going to give you very much information to go out to the public. So it
And I
wasn't until I went.
saw, apologies for remember, I think I saw the interview you did with Peter Slan on C-SPAN.
Oh, loved him.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And this is, okay, wait, David, Jamie, Claude, anybody ever thought about working for the CIA? I still do. I'm
No.
looking for the senior waiver because I think
I
I'm going
could
to
not.
go.
Yeah, I
No,
can't say
no.
that
I thought it would be cool as a kid. I thought that would be a great job to have.
Yeah.
I
Oh,
thought,
there you
based
go.
on movies that I saw, though, so it wasn't
Exactly.
real life.
I once
Really,
briefly.
always really good dressers. Really good.
Always. I once briefly thought about the AFL-CIO, but
Oh, for
that was as
goodness
close as
sake.
I got.
There you go.
Sorry.
Okay,
It
so
was Tori, it was the international side of it. That's what intrigued me. That's what I wanted. But when I got in, well, then I learned a little bit more about it. I learned what it's involving, like with the it, It was serious. It wasn't
Did you have any second thoughts? Did you go, oh.
No. Because I wanted the challenge. I mean, my whole life I had been kind of striving for one more thing or one higher thing. It was exciting. It was a challenge. It was nothing. The first year was a training year. We did things like we were out in the woods doing land nav, night nav. We were on boats. We used to say to each other, we're getting paid to play in the woods. I mean, it was amazing. And my whole life, we were doing fun, cool stuff.
What was the male-female ratio when you were in your year of training?
Well, when I was going through training, it wasn't just the DL. It wasn't just the clandestine service. It was some analysts were in the class, some logistics people, management people, odds and ends. But those in the DL, there were women. Not as many, of course, as in the other directorates. But the whole story is that as I was moving up my career and having more kids, there were no women that had so many kids. They all just left.
Sure. They didn't do that. Okay, wait, back to training. Again, David, Jamie, Claude, I've tried many, many times, and I can't do it. A compass?
Oh.
I'm thrown out in the woods by myself. So what was the hardest part of your training in those kinds of things?
Well, the hardest part was, I mean, yes, you had to use a compass. You had to get out of the woods. But the hardest part was you were hungry. You had to forage for food in the woods. And yes, obviously we weren't going to be stuck there forever. Yeah. But when you're out there for two or three nights, it gets old. There was also a part that was very, very stressful when they ambushed us. Came down the road in trucks, you know, people in hoods, threw us in the back of the truck, threw us in a prison. We thought we were in there 4 weeks. It was probably, 8 hours, 12 hours maybe. But we had our little bit of rice and water and, that's okay. We knew again we weren't going to be tortured.
You probably weren't going to die.
Probably not going to die.
Yeah.
But it was scary.
What was the washout rate like?
Nobody washed out because of that, because all that was trying to do is really teach us, hey, we can keep going.
Right.
The washout rate, and I don't know if that's the right term, but at the end of the day, when you're doing real spy stuff, trying to recruit your instructors, and that's when people say you're not cut out for this, because there's certain kinds of people that can do this, Tori. It's not everybody. I mean, you have to be able to pull information out of people. You have to be able to get them to trust you. You have to be able to come up with a plan if things go wrong. I mean, there's a lot of personality traits that the instructors would see that you didn't have. And they would say, look, you might want to go work in a
go
bank.
Somewhere else. David, Jamie, iconic journalists, both of you.
Yes.
Thought iconic in so many ways. Yeah. Not completely dissimilar, correct? Maybe the stakes are.
I'm just thinking the same thing. It's like, exactly. Get someone to trust you, pull information out of
stuff.
Them. Right. That's basic. I'm trying to find food. That's another.
I mean, when you had to stand in line at the Starbucks in the Pentagon, Jamie, that was rough. That was rough.
Well, I used to joke, and I don't joke about this anymore because the atmosphere at the Pentagon has changed a lot, but I used to joke that my job at the Pentagon was to wander around, try to find out secret things, and then blab them to everybody. If I wasn't a journalist exercising my First Amendment responsibilities, I would be considered a spy. But because we're not actually, nothing we find are we keeping secret or trading in secrets. We're revealing secrets. Yeah. But, even journalists realize that there are necessary secrets that the government has. And one of the things that trained and responsible journalists do is they do not disclose necessary secrets that are protecting national security. And that's a discussion
that's great.
We have with the other side. When I say the other side, the government and even the CIA, who we would call from time to time just to get the standard no comment.
Oh, Bill Harlow, greatest job in the world, no comment. I always wanted to be the spokesperson for the CIA. No comment. Okay, David, have people shared things with you that you said, I'm not going to use that because that's just not in anybody's interest?
Yeah, every day you get something. find something out. I think the misnomer that people don't understand about journalists is that we know a lot more than we actually report.
Yeah.
If you're any good at this at all.
What
we know
you
a lot more about things that are going on, but everything isn't a scoop. I mean, some people in my business now think everything should be a scoop, but I do not. And so I think most people still do not. And they understand that this is part of the currency. And I was curious about this, Anne. It's such a different, I mean, it's a similar skill set in that we're trying to extract information out of people, but it's not, I don't know that everything was life and death with you, but certainly much more serious stuff. And I just wondered what your background was that made you feel confident that you could do that.
Good question.
So I wasn't in as much danger. I knew how to protect myself, but you're right, David. It was the people we were getting the information from. They were far, far more danger than I was. What made me want to do it, I think, was the challenge. You know, it wasn't easy. And it certainly wasn't easy going home and cooking dinner and then having to go back out to meet my agents. But that was part of what I wanted, why I wanted to do it. It's something inside me, I guess. It's hard to explain, but you just have that. I mean, there are people that just want to make widgets every day and go home and take a nap. But there are people that want to do the hard things. So I guess that was kind of something inside me.
Well, I have two big questions. And the first one I just wanted is, what did your kids know? What did your children know about what you did? And what did they think of it? And did you have to keep them? Did you have like a cover story about what mom does when she has to go out and meet her agent?
So my kids did not know what I did because they probably didn't really care anyway. And there was no reason to tell them. I was overseas, a diplomat for State Department. That was my cover. So during the day, I was going to work. That's all they knew. I was going to work like every mom and dad go to work. When I went out late at night, they didn't ask questions. They were usually in bed, or I had gotten them ready for bed, or my husband, their dad was getting them ready for bed. And again, you guys, they had their life. They were playing with friends. They had their homework. They had their play dates. They had their sleepovers. They weren't really, they didn't care a whole lot about what mom was doing when she wasn't.
So when they eventually found out.
So my oldest daughter found out when she was probably in middle school. She was very good friends with the daughter of my chief. And so we both had, my chief had given me a piece of artwork that was on our wall. Catherine said to Claire, my daughter, you know, we have that same piece of artwork and you know, your mom works for my dad and they both work for the CIA. That's how Claire found out.
Oh, great.
She didn't tell the other siblings. They only found out the night before my retirement party because I wanted them to come into the headquarters building, walk across the seal and come into my retirement party.
And so they had never been there. They had never been.
No, of course not. They had no idea. They had no idea.
That's a moment.
So were they excited? They didn't have they weren't, oh, mom, it's so cool. They were just, oh.
Mom's a spy.
Why did Claire know before us? That's what they were concerned about. You know, who was the first to know?
Hey, but Anne,
they're proud of me now, though.
You're doing this incredible work for the CIA, for the country, and you're doing all the mom things, the grocery shopping, taking the kids to appointments, to play dates, to sports, to everything else. And you're packing a heat. Tell us about the 9mm Glock.
I love shooting the Glock.
You know, me, it's like I'm going to hide the candy bar so my kids can't find it when I'm driving them around.
I didn't have to carry it all the time. I only carried it when I was overseas in a war zone in one of my assignments, we were obligated to carry it.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, obviously at home I had a gun safe, so they didn't see it. I mean, I didn't bring it out to show them. They didn't know that I was going to the range monthly to stay up on my marksmanship. They didn't know. Now, of course, they know now, but they, I mean, it's not, again, going back to, I think, what Jamie and David alluded to, I didn't talk about this stuff. I mean, I didn't say, hey, kids, guess what? Or, hey, guess what I'm doing? I didn't talk about my work. I didn't talk about who I met, what I was doing, what I was talking about.
But you dedicated, I love dedications, to my children, Claire, Kyle, Eric, Alexis, and Karina, for whom this story is written. You wanted them to know the story. What did you want? What was most important to you that they know?
So I wanted them to know, well, I wanted them to be able to remember. Let me just back up for a second. My father, after my mom died when I was young, my dad wrote a memoir of his time with my mom. He had four copies, bound it, gave it to my brothers and myself. What a gift. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that. And I thought, I want to write down not just what we did every day, but my feelings about the job and my feelings about why I was doing what I was doing and why we were moving so much and the decisions that we made. And a lot, you'll see in the book, a lot of it is just kind of how I was thinking about it. Mm-hmm. How did I feel about it? And I wanted them to have that forever.
Yeah.
Pass on to their children. So I also wanted them to know how important the job was to me. I mean, obviously my family was important, but the value that I felt I brought to, it's just one person, but the value I felt I brought to the work and how important the work was. I wanted mm-hmm. to realize that, yeah. understand it.
Well, since everything you do is, secret, the image that we had, that we laymen have of spies is that it's a somewhat glamorous and exciting, dangerous mm-hmm. world. Is it glamorous or is it just a lot of tedious spy work?
I kept thinking patience. I'm sorry. And I just kept thinking patience when I was reading this book. I thought, wow, this person has incredible patience. What it would take to work somebody to, mm-hmm. To gain the relationship with them. But I'm sorry.
It's, I would say glamorous, not in the glamour that you see in the movies or in the TV shows. You know, the Claire Danes on the phone, she's beautiful and she's coming here and going, it's not glamorous per se, but it is exciting and it's fun. It's thrilling. Can you imagine the feel you have when you find somebody who's got incredible access to some incredible piece of intelligence and you get it out of them? Oh, yeah. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah. Or just traveling and traveling in Alias, for example. And, you get to a point where they're asking you a question, then, you have to kind of figure it out on the spot. I mean, it's exciting. It's very exciting.
Bush 41 once said, because he had a lot of really wonderful jobs, but he said the CIA was the job he loved the most and he hated the most. He loved it because it was this incredibly important work. And the things, 99% of it, thank goodness, we never hear about. Right. We never hear about it. But he just thought the work was so important. He thought he contributed to it. He loved it. But he was a real family guy and he hated that he couldn't talk to his family about it. Was it hard for you? Were you so freakishly busy? Again, five freaking kids. Were you so busy you couldn't even think of this? Or was it frustrating or challenging not to be able to share much of this with your husband, with your kids?
No, my husband knew who I worked for, obviously.
Right.
But again, I didn't want to talk to people outside the office about who I was meeting with or what we were discussing. Because you weren't supposed to. I mean, it is secret stuff. And so I didn't feel bad about it. I didn't feel like I wanted to tell him things. He knew that it was important. That's all that mattered.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get you with the real question. Let's get you out with this. Lying. Great reflection on lying. David, why are you laughing when I say lying? Why are you laughing?
I'm always curious about liars because I have to deal with so many of them.
How many of the people that you interview on a daily basis, David, do you think are lying?
Ooh.
Out of 10?
Yeah.
8.
Really?
About something. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. No. So that's a very interesting concept with us because obviously we lie about, when we need to. We lie, our name or where we're going but we don't lie about the information we get. We get the information. We write it exactly as we got it from the agent. I don't put my own, I might put source comment, my own comment, but it's clearly stated in my own comment. We don't lie about that stuff. We don't make things up. And we don't lie to our families. I've mentioned that in the book. You don't lie to your family. You don't lie to your colleagues. You don't lie to your boss. But you do lie to the train conductor when he comes down the aisle and says,
great story.
What's your name?
Yeah, great story.
So you have to wonder the line.
Sorry, if I could, I do wonder, like, as you're taking the kids around to whether it's soccer or a birthday party or things like that, and you hear parents and other people talking about like just issues of the day and things going on with the government, and the truth, but you hear their opinions. when you hear something that's so far off, like inside of you is the temptation to say, you guys have no clue what you're talking about. That is
I know that. I mean, I know they have no clue. And most people don't have a clue what's going on. But I just am satisfied that I do, and that for my work, when I know what I have to say, what I can't say. You know, people out there, boy, if you listen to everybody out there and have an opinion about, oh, you're going to be busy. It's not worth it.
Yeah, very true. Do you miss it? Do you miss the work?
Of course I miss it, Tori. I miss being overseas. The first time that when I decided to retire and come back, and that meant not going overseas anymore, it was tough. You know, 3 years went by and my husband and I said, whoa, because we're used to moving. I do miss the work. I miss that everybody has to retire. Everybody has to leave at some point. You know, we're all dispensable, as we all know. So you just had to kind of realize that it was time to go.
Okay, this really is the last question before we subject you to 60 seconds more. David, you can check out whenever you want. All the techniques, all the training, everything that the CIA gave you about getting information from people, how to do your job, did you ever apply it to your kids or your husband? Because I could have used some of those techniques.
Again, you got to know when to lie. You got to know when to, you know, what's right, what's not right. No, I didn't use it. Well, no, I take that back real quick. I take that back, Tori. I did during my career, as I think I mentioned this in the book, I had to use my kids to get close to people.
Yeah.
There were parents that I really wanted to meet. Well, how better way than to arrange a play date?
So great. No resentment from your kids now that
there was some. Now when they find out, Eric was not happy. He said, are you kidding me? I didn't even like Peter, whatever his name was.
Well, that's spectacular.
But you got to do what you got to do.
Okay, wait. I swear to God, we'll get you out by 40 after, I promise. There are so many wonderful, wonderful stories in Wife, Mother, Spy. The story about, I think you were in Southern Europe and Eric was maybe 2 and Eric does a walkabout. And this is a case of really good parenting, people. Just get ready. Excellent.
That was Northern Africa. He was
Northern Africa, okay.
Oh, when he got out the front gate? Uh-huh. Unbelievable. I mean, he was the one we lost all the time, but not permanently, but it was just for periods of time. And that was not, as I note in the book, not our poor parenting. It was just, he happened to be a little, you know, precocious.
Risky.
So that was, we lived in a beautiful house, nice house. It was great. And we had a garden, a terrace garden out to a gate, to a road, thankfully not a busy road, but it was. So we're upstairs or we're in the house somewhere. My husband hears the ring outside the gate. So there's a gate, ring the gate, and then you have to go inside at the garden and then to the front of the house.
Got it.
He looks out the window. There's a woman out there holding Aaron. He didn't know she was holding Aaron. I take it back. Holding a baby. I'm sorry. A woman, local, holding a baby. My husband says, are you kidding? Ignores her. She rings again. He looks out and we thought she was begging.
Sure.
We lived in a nice house. It looked like, all of a sudden, he realized it was Eric she was holding.
This Your son.
Angel had picked up Eric, who had gotten out the gate, literally climbed over the gate, and walked down the street. She picked him up, brought him back home. I mean,
so great. Wow.
That, and then there's the story about my daughter who almost fell off the balcony in Paris. I mean, people are angels, and you don't even know they're out there. They return your kids.
Yeah. You need them when you're a bad parent. Okay, now this is going to be.
This is Chatter on Books.
Okay, what's next?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, this book thing is just taking off, Tori. It's amazing.
It
was on NBC Today Sunday, on Sunday morning, the Today Show.
Yeah, really with them. Nice. Yeah, and I just want to point out, Anne, that was after you booked with us.
That's right. I was going to write for 5 people, my 5 kids. I was going to write a book, for 5 kids. Look at it. It's gone like crazy.
But that's what everyone says. David, Jamie, Claude can vouch for this, right, guys? Every author says you write about what you really care about, what you really want to write about. Because at the end of the day, very few people sell a whole lot of books. So write about what you really want to write about. And then whatever happens in addition to those five people, great.
Well, what's interesting is, Tori, this is the thing. It's just my life. It's not a big deal. It was just my life. I went to work, came home, went to work, came home. And then to see that people really want to read about it, it's just amazing. Amazing.
It's great. It's well-deserved. It's absolutely well-deserved. Thanks.
And by the way, only a spy would say, the life of a spy, who cares about it? I went to work and I came home and went back. What are you talking about? Of course it's interesting. What are you talking about, man?
For these guys now, and for many, many years, when I first met my husband, I kind of knew what he did because he worked on the Hill. But ever since, I've had absolutely no clue what he does. You could hold a gun to my head. I could not tell you what he does. And I've had this secret thought for this fantasy for a long time that someday he's going to walk in and tell me I'm a spy, which would make me so happy. But he's in his early 60s now. I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not.
But if there's a senior program, I'm in. Okay, everybody, Chatter listeners, go to your favorite independent bookstore, buy Wife, Mother, Spy. It is fabulous. And Anne, whatever you do next, we hope you'll come back.
Thanks, Tori.
You'll come back. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And everybody, we are back in person live at Caddy's on Cordell in Bethesda on November 10th with Damaris Smith. David, give us a 15-second pitch on D. Smith and his book, Turf Wars.
He ran the Players Union in the NFL for a lot of years, got stories about the league and the players, and it's pretty good.
It's great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Tori.